Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Kinang puranang nawang nati sambawang virata chitayati ke bawasming te kinabija awirulhi chanda nibanti dira yatayang padipoti. And for those paying attention, that was one of the last verses in the Ratana Sutta which we just chanted. I was going to speak about something else, but chanting that sutta and knowing its meaning, I wanted to talk about this evening, to expand its meaning, which is brilliant. To show that what we chant here is not just for ritual, it's not just empty of any meaning, but if you understand the Pali, it is incredibly profound, inspiring and illuminating. And especially this evening, we have our guests from Malaysia. On these talks on a Wednesday night, they are aimed at the monks. So please excuse me if I use some terms or some concepts which you don't understand, because these are for the monks who have been practicing a long time, who know some Pali, who have heard me teach before, and who just want some more profound teachings about meditation and the path to enlightenment. So this is focused especially on those deeper teachings for the monastic community. But first of all, that verse in the Ratana Sutta was teaching about the effects of practicing this path. Not only does it talk about what the insights and the results of those insights are, but also gives a huge amount of instruction on how to get to that stage of enlightenment, and in particular, how to meditate. Usually, whether it's the first part of a meditation retreat or the first month or 6 weeks of these rains retreats, I try and restrict myself from talking about what you're going to find at the end of the path, and just focus more on the practice of the path, of how to develop deeper meditation, how to bring more power into the practice which you're doing in your huts and in your rooms. These are mostly meditation talks, and this will be no exception. But you see the first line of that gatha, that verse in four lines, or pada, of the Ratana Sutta, Kinang Puranang Nawang Nati Sambawang. This means destroyed is the past, the old, and there is no more future being made. Kinang Puranang Nawang Nati Sambawang. I'm talking about Sambawang, Nawang, no new stuff being created. And of course it's a very beautiful phrase. For a long time now I've been teaching people, monks and lay people, about the importance of getting present moment awareness to literally destroy the past, the history, Kinang Puranang. And sometimes people ask, is this just something modern, or is it from the time of the Buddha? Is this his teachings? And of course it is. And the other place where it is mentioned is in the Bhadekarata Suttas, there's three of them. But that's another teaching which you can look at later on. But it certainly does impress upon each one of us that this ability to let go totally of what's gone before and not to create anything for the future is an important part of your meditation practice. It doesn't matter how your meditation has been so far in this retreat, whether you've got nimittas, jhanas, or whether you've been sleeping, fantasizing, just wasting time. that doesn't matter at all. That is destroyed, kinang puranang. Allow it to disappear. Because if you make yourself a prisoner of the past, what happens is, yeah, you have not such good meditation in the past, and you think because of that perception that you haven't succeeded in the past, that prevents you from succeeding in the present. You actually limit yourself by thinking, I'm hopeless, I'm no good, simply because it hasn't worked so far. Some years ago I gave this simile. As you scratch around to find some way of explaining these profound truths, and it was a simile of the meditator, the monk, the nun, who was trying to cross the river. It was using a simile which the Buddha often used of going from one side of the river to another side of the river. And that's why, like an anigami, was someone who had gone to the other side, let alone an arahat. So using that simile of trying to cross the stream and trying to get to the other side where there was safety, I adapted that simile to have this person, imagine this person, walking up and down the banks of the stream, looking for a bridge, looking for a ford, looking for somewhere to go across. Up and down they go, up and down they go, for months, for years, for lifetimes, trying to find a way across. And you know what that means. That means all the striving and the struggling, all the efforts, all of the time you spend on retreats, meditating, studying, whatever it is. Sometimes it seems endless. You go up and down trying to find the key, the bridge which goes across. And the point is that you don't need a bridge. You can actually step over that stream. It's so narrow. But you have to stop going up, stop going down, and go in the new direction, perpendicular. A thing which you've never done before. Not striving, not being lazy, but doing nothing. The perpendicular approach. And you find, instead of going up the stream or down the stream, you face the stream and just step across. It's that simple, because the stream is that narrow. Letting go of the past is that simple too. There comes a time when you just, literally, let it go. Until that time, you just walk up and down, up and down. How do I let it go? What should I do? How can I forgive? How can I just abandon it? And all that time, all that past, all the disappointments, the frustrations, thinking you can't meditate, thinking how many more times, how many more days of this retreat are left because it's been not good so far. You're making yourself the prisoner from the past. You drop it. It's gone. But look at the past. You all know that recently I had a big birthday. And somebody did a book which had my biography so far. I would tell you that the person who wrote most of it was wise enough to call it hagiography, not biography. Because a hagiography is an enlarged, expanded biography. It adds much to what really happened. That's what a hagiography is. It is if, you know, if that's your teacher, if that's a person you respect, you always tend to exaggerate the psychic powers, exaggerate just the achievements, exaggerate the holiness. Why? Because that's my teacher. And my teacher's better than your teacher, na 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 na. Which is actually what happens. That's why people write these biographies a lot of times. But anyhow, just one of the things I noticed in that past is actually how people remembered the same things. There was one story I pointed out to people was, you know, this wonderful, I was very inspired to get a message from Ajahn Jhakara, who was the first monk who was here. And he's my friend. You know, he left some years ago, but we still have a wonderful friendship. But when he was saying where he first met me, it was totally wrong. In that book, he said that he went to Bangkok because Ajahn Chah was invited there. He was invited there by a Somdet, one of the very senior monks. There's only 9 of these senior monks. He's the top 9 monks in the hierarchy of Thailand. He was invited to Bangkok to actually participate in an ordination of a Western monk from England. And I know that wasn't me, because I know that monk. We were in Wat Buddha Pradipa together. You know, I was training and he was training after me to go to Thailand. But he was a little bit, he was actually crazy. He was mentally not all there. But I'd already gone to Thailand, had already ordained as a monk. I was staying in Wat Bapong. And I think at that time, I think it was still Wat Bapong, Wat Nanachat was not yet established. And at that time, that was the time Ajahn Chah got this message. There was another Western monk ordaining in Bangkok. Can he come down to witness the ordination? And when I just mentioned casually, oh, I know that fellow. We were in Wat Buddha Pradipa in London together. Ajahn Chah said, oh, if you know him, it's good that you come down as well. And Ajahn Chakra went down as well. It wasn't me, it was another monk. I know that for certain. And interestingly, Ajahn Chakra remembers that as the first time he met me. I know that when we look at the past, we're never certain what actually happened. He's a really nice, he used to be a great monk, nice man, very honest, but his memory is not accurate. Neither is mine. Just ask Ajahn Bhamali or ask Ajahn Apichatto. Sometimes I can't remember things I said or just remember them inaccurately. Sometimes it's very frustrating for them, you know, because I'm supposed to be the boss. And I said, I never did that. He said, yes, you did. And sometimes he's right. I accept that. Because I know I just cannot trust my memory. Because it's its very nature. What actually happened, no one really knows. And sometimes it may be caught on camera. Was that me? Did that actually happen? I don't remember it that way. So the point of this is to say you cannot trust the past. Especially anything more than 6 months ago, a year ago, 10 years ago. My goodness, you just do not know what happened and why you did it. And it really is not necessary. It is foolishness, it is delusion to carry it. And even what I did earlier on today, my meditation before tea time, I'm not going to carry that around. Good or bad, we totally let it go. So, kinang puranang, the past is destroyed. If you want to get deep meditation, you have to do that. You know that sometimes, you know, for some reason or another, for tiredness, for busyness, you know, that I'm physically tired sometimes with all the work you have to do, especially if you're the center of a party like last weekend, and you get exhausted. So you sit there and meditate, and then you get just dull and sleepy. But I'm wise enough now, I use wisdom power, never willpower, to look, I've just been dull. But just because I've been dull just a second ago does not mean I can't be alert right now. I let go of the past. And it's incredible how well that works. If you carry the past, I'm tired. I've been doing so much stuff. I've been working so hard. I've been sick. Whatever it is, if you carry that past, then you create your present moment from that past. You don't have to do that. It's incredible when you let go of that past, this present moment is free. Yes, you were tired. Yes, you did a lot of stuff. But right now, it's a totally different world. Disconnect the present from the past. This is a new world, a new birth, a new moment, something totally original. And it's only connected to the past because of your ignorance and delusion. That's what it meant by destroying the past. practice with that, play with that, try it out. And you'll find that if you can just have enough faith in that and confidence in that, it actually works. You know, a lot of times when I give these instructions, it only works if you really believe them. If you think, ah, yeah, you know, just Ajahn Brahm, he was born enlightened. Look, have a look in that biography. Those pictures were true. That's what I looked like when I was 4 or 5 or 6, you know, making funny faces in front of the photographer. So that's not the pose of someone who was born an arahat. Okay? So thank you for putting in those stupid pictures of me. I was an ordinary guy. But what we do is to let that whole past disappear. Have that bit of trust. You find it actually works. But of course, if you don't believe it, of course it never does work. You think, ah, oh, yeah, you know, you can't disconnect the past. I'm a creature of my past. I'm built of my past. You're not. That's the amazing thing. There's no one there, so there's no one to be built. That's why you can be free. And so you can totally flip in a moment. And of course, I've done that with all sorts of stuff, with toothaches, with typhus fever, and all sorts of stuff. Now, flip. I'm not a prisoner of the past. So this moment is totally free. Sometimes that's in deep meditation. You're blocked. I don't try and develop the past or figure out why it went wrong. You totally let it go. Abandon it. Jettison it. Every moment do that. And if you can jettison the past, it's kinang puranang. It's destroyed as the past. This is not just the state of the arahat. It's just how you get there. How you get deep meditation. So looking just in ordinary things in daily life, someone says something to you. Yeah, they call you a pig, they call you stupid, the laziest anagarika in the whole monastery. I don't know why Ajahn Brahm puts up with you. I'm going to complain to you about it. Look, that was a moment ago. Drop it. Let it go. Abandon it. Because your job is to destroy the past, not to cherish it. You can't trust it. It's a burden. It stops you being free in meditating. Some of you might still, especially the guests and the Anagarikas, still be lingering on where you came from, your family, your friends, your old job and all that stuff. Sometimes, as monks, you do go back to those places. I remember just one time when I went back to London to visit my mother. This is one of the early times. While she was cooking my lunch, I said, I'm going out for a walk. And I went for an hour or two walking around my old haunts, you know, the park where I played soccer for so many hours in my youth, the old block of flats where we used to live, the old primary school, and all those roads where we used to play soccer and graze your knee, as I keep saying. I went to all those places. And one thing I realized that, yeah, they look the same because, you know, in London they don't really change the houses at all. They were there for 50 years, 100 years, 150 years, and they look the same on the outside. But it was very easy to see, yeah, the outside looked the same, but the inside had totally changed. Those moments which they reminded me of were long gone, and they were not recreatable. They had finished. It was a wonderful way of overcoming all my last vestiges of nostalgia. All my old memories I could totally abandon, seeing and realizing there was nothing left. It had all gone. It had moved, and I'd moved with it. It was a beautiful thing to do. It was freeing you of so much history. And I realized that history, that past, was a prison. It was a burden. It was an irritation. It was something which, look, I don't need that. And if you free yourself from that, it's as if that you are out of the prison. You're like this bird who can just fly to the highest heavens because you're not weighed down by where you've come from or what you've done. Kinang Puranang. And of course, Nawang Nati Sambawang. There is no more new things being created. In your meditation, do you plan? That's what it means by creating new things. Nawang Sambawang. creating new buildings for this monastery, new ideas for how we run this place, new ideas for the kitchen or for what you need in the storeroom, or new ideas for your hut, new ideas of where you want to go after this rains retreat and how you're going to get there. This is amazing just how much of the future we are spending, wasting the moment just creating. And of course, that's not really good for your meditation. In fact, it just wastes so much opportunity. How hard it is it to come to a place like this? Especially you visitors from Malaysia. You know, it's amazing you've made it here and you haven't got a retreat now, a quiet one. Now all the celebrations are over. You've got 4 or 5 days or 3 days, I don't know how long you've got at Jhana Grove. It's all yours. No telephone calls, no business, nothing to do. It's amazing you've got this far and you've got this amazing opportunity. Please don't waste this by worrying about what you're going to do when you get home. And you're, say with the Anagarikas, guests, visitors, whether visitors from the United States, Yao San and John Pan, look, please don't worry about the future. You're sacrificing, you're giving up so much by thinking about the future, giving up the opportunity just to be here. To spend as much time as possible in this present moment and to stop creating the future. Once we create the future, that becomes our other prison. And of course, you know what it's like with the plans and the dreams and the hopes. It's not as if it's just a wasting time, but it's actually going in completely the wrong direction of the Dhamma. We should be going inside, not outwards. During the sutta classes, I introduced the concept of the asavas, the outflowings of the mind. And those are the two main places they flow to. They flow out to the future and out to the past. And you can actually feel that. Here you are in this moment. What have you got to do with the future? What have you got to do with the past? It's not your business. Leave it alone and just be in this moment. So it is. No creating the future, no creating the past. Incredibly free. And as I say, all of the ill will, and we call that anger if it's to someone else, guilt if it's towards ourselves, all that negativity and all that fault finding, all about the past, all the fears and the worries, even all the lust and desire, that's all about the future. Total myth. What are you desiring? Well, I remember just desiring things, whether it's sex, music or whatever. There's always something really disappointing about it. It was like the hope for it, the desire for it was the best part. The anticipation, the wanting. But when you actually got it, it was a bit disappointing. Sometimes you wouldn't admit that because it wasn't done. Sometimes people thought, oh, you must be a failure, you don't know how to do sex, you don't know how to watch a movie, you don't know how to enjoy movies or music. That wasn't the case. I was just being totally honest with it. It was the hope, the promise was much greater than the result. That's why the anticipation, that is the joy for most people. What did they say, that old saying that was done by, I think it was Oscar Wilde. The only two tragedies in life, I haven't said it for a long time, the only two tragedies in life, first tragedy, suffering, this is his two noble truths. And it's actually quite good. The first noble truth, according to Oscar Wilde, is not getting what you want. That's suffering. He was wise enough to say the second noble truth, that suffering is getting what you want. Those two are suffering. And that was why we also, you know, this, I gave this talk to lay people, some of you monks may not have heard this, but I read that in some book somewhere that the two worst curses in the Arab world And in the Arab world, the second worst curse you can put on anybody, and this is really being mean and nasty, someone you really hate who's really treated you badly, they curse people by saying, "May the fleas of 1,000 camels infest your armpits." It's really quite interesting. But the worst was much, much, much worse than that. And that was, "May you get whatever you want as soon as you want it." And I thought, wow, that must have come from some Buddhist who was traveling in the Arab world. That was really smart. "May you get what you want as soon as you get it." It's the worst curse you can give a person. So you can think that out for yourself, why it is. But it is that future where we do all the wanting, and when that is gone, there's no craving left. There's no place to crave. There's no thirst for anything, because you're destroying it. The past destroyed, no future is being created. Where can craving be? Where can the idea of attainments be? Heavens, jhanas, nibbanas, anything like that. You destroyed all of that when you destroy the future. Now you're getting close to knowing how to meditate. That's why, look, how many times I say you don't do anything, because doing is creating a future. It is nawang sambawang. You're creating something new whenever you strive, crave, do things. That's why I like to try and tie, you know, my teachings, the way I explain things, to the word of the Buddha. When you tie it to it, people give it more credence. It gives it more authority. So by abandoning that future totally, absolutely, 100%, you're actually feeling what it's like to be an arahat. So if you ever want to know what it feels like, that's one way. Destroy all the past, not creating any future. Now, pretending to be an arahat, pretending to be enlightened, is a beautiful way of meditating. Yeah, it's pretense. It's not real. But it gives you the path. This is what an arahat is like. Let's feel it. Taste it. Get the taste of freedom, as they say, the vimutti rasa. When you get that taste of freedom, it's amazing that your meditation starts to take off. Just that much, even just listening to me, you know, there's a sense of that this is on the right path, this is peace, this is freedom. You know, your mind actually inclines towards this. It recognizes that this is Dhamma, this is peace. This is freedom, the ending of suffering, even if it's only half of suffering, or even a fraction of suffering, even if it's only just for a few moments. This is it. This is the path. And if you remember that while you are sitting, watching your breath, doing sweeping meditation, or just sitting there, blissing out, don't create any future. Don't try to attain things. Don't create anything more. Because this is a path of abandoning creating, letting go, stopping the sankharas, the creator. Sabba sankhara samatha was one of the descriptions of nibbana. All these constructions being calmed and stilled. And I really love that. And you know what it says in that passage? You say, few people can understand that, or even contemplate, or even accept it's possible, or even think it's a good thing to do. You know, a lot of people are so addicted to creating things, to doing things, to making it happen. They're doers, controllers. And the very idea of stopping and doing nothing, to many it's so scary. That's why the Buddha said few people can even comprehend that that's something worthwhile. But as you imagine you're an arahat, and just, but don't go around telling people, you can get in trouble that way if you're a monk, but just, this is just a skillful means, okay, to do by yourself. Imagine you're an arahat, and imagine that you're not creating any future, no past, you're just here. and you feel that peace. The reason I ask you to do that is because you know that this works, that this is happiness, this is going in the end of suffering. And it gives you piti, this beautiful joy, inspiration. Yeah, you're getting on the path. And that was going to be the talk I was going to give this evening. I thought when I left my hut, just this joy, this is it, I'm on the path, this is good. This tastes nice, this smells right. And that sort of joy which comes up, that gives a sense of tranquility. Your mind is not thinking, it's not agitated. Even your body is relaxed like it is now if you're getting inspired by what I'm saying. That inspiration and joy, you can see, leads to bodily tranquility. And this is not just theory, you experience it. You know what it's like sometimes to sit in your hut, restless, you can't find the comfortable position. Doesn't matter about your cushion, it's nothing to do with the cushion, your hut, your chair, whatever. It's to do with your mind, it's got no joy. So don't try and hold your body still. If you do, you're using willpower. Use the wisdom power, as I keep saying, and this is using joy power, inspiration power, piti power. And that makes your body still. That allows you to sit for long periods of time, not through will, but through joy. That's why when people ask you in interviews, how long should you sit meditation for? As long as you have joy. Basically, you don't do it. Joy decides how long you're going to sit there for, because your body is tranquil. It's having a good time. There's no need to move. It doesn't move. You can't move. Because joy is giving that beautiful bodily tranquility. Past is destroyed. No more future. Bliss at last. That joy just makes incredible stillness of the body. And also, more importantly, the stillness of the mind. That tranquility of the mind. No pasadi. It's calmed down. Settled. When that happens, just all these thoughts, and where do they come from anyway? Just from wanting something, wanting to change, wanting to work it out. It's all wanting to get something, to create something. Nibbana is not something you create. It's not an attainment, an achievement. It's what's there when everything else disappears. It's a stopping, it's a ceasing. Understanding that, understand why you have to stop creating a future and destroying the past. Do that, you feel the stillness, you feel the peace. You're off on meditation. You know, a lot of times I don't tell people, to start watching the breath, watch it at the tip of the nose, or do metta meditation, or do counting meditation. Look, sometimes people say, when are you going to teach metta meditation? When are you going to teach Anapanasati? Look, I am teaching it. This is how it happens. When you're still, then you can feel the breath, and it's there for you. The breath is always there, but there's a noise, the noise of your thinking, the noise of your restless mind, or sometimes, and I'm saying it's a noise of your dullness, which blankets the more subtle sounds of a breath. There is this beautiful, natural loving kindness, just like there's a natural experience of the breath. But if you try and force it, how can you force metta? That's in the opposite direction. You force it, you kill it, you destroy it. You don't force it. You just allow tranquility to come up. And with that tranquility and joy, you have this beautiful sense of softness and kindness towards everything. You don't make love. You let love happen. You open your heart. In other words, you free your heart. And there is as much metta as you will ever want. You never create metta. That's creating a future. It means hating the past. When you stop creating, metta's there. Just like the stillness, the tranquility, it just grows naturally. And because I've been doing this such a long time now, you just know it. And Oh, you just rejoice in it. It's just a beautiful process. And you realize at last I've got on the track. This is the way. It feels right. It is right. And it's easy. It's not hard to do. It's just, you have to stop that creating a future, lingering on in the past. If you just do that much, you get this beautiful tranquility. And from that tranquility of the body and the tranquility of the mind, you're not going thinking about things, you're not worried about the future. Oh, just peace, joy at last. You know when that birthday party was over? Yeah, you know, it's just, people said, please enjoy yourself. And I just said, I enjoy myself. It was enjoy, not enjoy. Because I love peace, I love silence, I love just getting in my cave and just shutting both doors and just disappearing. And look, if you can feel that tranquility, you just got it right in my mind right now, just so strong. Just what do you want anything else for? My party will just be just closing my eyes and meditating and just blissing out. What more joy can you want? So that you endure, you let go, and there you have it. Peace and bliss. It feels right. It's real happiness. And that just develops, you know, from the tranquility you get the sukha and just becomes so strong. Brilliant, beautiful, delightful breath, nimittas, they just come. And from that sukha you get the deep stillness. You know why? It's because you're just so happy to be here. You don't want to go anywhere else. All the craving, all the fault finding, all of the negativity, 100% of negativity stops. You're just so content because you've got so much happiness. So content you don't want anything more. You're not aiming for jhanas. You're not aiming to get your PB, your personal best in meditation. You're not aiming for anything. That's all creating a future. You've let that go at the beginning and you never pick it up throughout the whole meditation. If you do that, you're just off on the path, having a wonderful time. All the jhanas, whatever you aspire to, they just come to you. Because you're not creating anything. You're not trying to attain, you're not grasping, you're not going out for things. You're staying at home. Going in. The opposite of the outflowings. And if you want to know what joy is, you just get into a few of these states. And just monastic life. Just how lucky I am to have stumbled along this path. So to see this, to felt it, to experience it, be able to get in whenever I want. Just, I am the richest person in the world. That's what the Buddha said to the king Ajatasattu, the great king of Magadha, which was the most powerful kingdom at that time, the most powerful realm and government in the whole of India. And the Buddha came along and said, you just don't know what happiness is, king. You haven't got a clue how to enjoy yourself. And that just really rocked the king. And then the Buddha started saying about his meditation. At least the king accepted. Yeah, that Buddha was a really happy, blissed out dude. That's probably what he thought, obviously, that he wasn't, you know, that much of a Buddhist, but really a great person. Just that much was understanding of this path. And once you start to get into these stages, you realize that's why, how fortunate you are just to be here and to taste this and get a glimpse and take it even further. And what's the next line? Oh yeah, well, after you get samadhi, you obviously, wow, this works. That's insight. You understand what this path is all about, disappearing, vanishing, all these things, the past and the future which define you, vanishing, your sense of self is gone. Because who are you? Who are you? For most of you, it's what you've done in the past. Doctor, lawyer, civil servant, whatever. That's what we say, you just filled out those census forms. Many of you, you have to say, you know, what your education is, what your name is. That's not who I am, that's who I was. Who are you now? Nobody. It's brilliant. But please, you know, glad you haven't filled out your census forms with dumber answers. What your education? That's not me, that was the past, that's some other person. What's your name? I don't know.
Thank you for not doing that. I'd have got in trouble. And you'd have probably been taken away in a white van. But anyway, virata chittayati kevalasmi. Oh, that's a brilliant line. Virata means like free, liberated. Is this mine from future existence? It doesn't have to be anymore. Just being somebody, you know, being Ajahn Brahm, being Ajahn Brahmani, being Ajahn Appi. It's just a pain in the ass being anything. Being a man, being a monk, being a nun. Imagine, just all of that disappears. You're not anything. This mind is free from being. That's a very incredible, powerful thing. For many, it's again scary. You mean, I'm not there? I'm nobody? I don't exist? Yeah. A lot of times that people think these monks are crazy. That's why there's another great saying that what enlightened ones say is happiness. People in the world think is suffering. They think we're crazy. You should actually be somebody. You know, look, I've got all these skills. I've already told people all my schemes of making lots and lots of money. I make up these schemes just for fun and games. You know, of having drive-in, the drive-in holy water? Just press a button, it squirts out water as you come through. I'm very innovative. I'm sure if I hadn't become a monk, I'd be a multi-millionaire now with a big company and on my third marriage, at least. So I'm very innovative, but and hardworking. You know, look, I built big monasteries and Jhana Grove retreat centres. You know, so building a corporation is easy, but so you don't want to do that. You don't want to exist. You just want to disappear and vanish. More simple as possible. To simplify and simplify and simplify until there's nothing left. For many people, they think that's crazy, that's suffering. What are you doing this for? This is for bliss, for freedom, for emptiness. And they think you're crazy. Fair enough. But whatever you want to do, I think you're crazy. So we're even on that part. But whatever, we're not creating any more existence. So what are you creating more existence? Virata chittaya, virata, free, chitta, mind, ayatike, future, bhavasmi, existence, all type of existence. You know the bhava, they said there's three bhavas, three existences. Existence in the realm of the five senses, that's, you know, this realm, heaven realms, hell realms, animal realms, all those sorts of realms. And the other two bhavas or states of existence are the jhana realms, that's the rupa bhava, and the immaterial realms, the arupa. All of those realms the mind is free from, liberated from. So you're not trying to get to jhanas. You're not trying to get to the immaterial realms. You're not trying to get to heaven. Your mind is free from all such future existences. Brilliant. It's gone. It's destroyed. It's going to end. Oh, what bliss. And the killer line, I call it a killer mob. Shouldn't we call it like Nibbana line, the cessation line? Kina bija, awiruli chana. That's not the killer line. The next one is the one I like the most. The seed has been destroyed. It can't grow anymore. And what is that seed? It's a craving. That's actually the seed, you know, which keeps you going on and on and on and on into different realms of existence, different states. Haven't you had enough? How many more times do you have to wake up in the morning with the runs, with diarrhea? How many times, you know, do you have to get disappointed when people let you down? How many times, you know, do you have to get old and go through this terrible dying process? How many times do you want to go back to school again, wear diapers, and when you want something, your mummy puts this dummy in your mouth, blech, so you can't say anything. How many haven't you had enough of that yet? That's why the old joke. What's the first thing a baby does when it's born? It cries. That's the only wisdom it ever has in those years. Cries, oh no, here we go again. And what do you do when you see a person in the coffin? They're always smiling. Actually, that's a bit of a unfair, because that's the undertakers. They just make the body smile. But the point is that all that existence, haven't you had enough of it yet? And there's a sense of, in that Ratana Sutta, the Buddha is telling us, oh, what joy. There's no more existence for us. It's lovely to see that that is actually the goal, to stop existing. It's weird for many people, but it's very clear, you know, how the Buddha taught. It's not going to some heaven realm, not going to some amitajitta realm where the mind is going to be there, or some sense of consciousness or being is always going to be there forever, but this is a being without suffering, an unmanifested mind or consciousness. It's amazing just how many people just hope so much for something, a tiny little place where they can exist after Nibbana. But the Buddha was just so beautiful, just to destroy all possibility of such hope. That's why on the gate of this monastery should be those words, give up hope, all ye who enter here. That's supposed to be in Dante's Inferno, the signs on hell. He just didn't understand what hell was. But to give up hope, to give up desire and craving and future, it's not hell. It's peace, it's freedom. And you feel that. But what actually happens when you stop trying to be anything? You stop trying to get enlightened, which is just another state of being for most people. You stop trying to get, you know, into a joyful sensory happiness, which is the karma bhava, the five sense existence. You stop trying to get jhanas, which is trying to get into the jhana existence or the immaterial existence. You stop trying to get anywhere. That means your mind is freed, virata citta, ayatike bhavasming, freed from future being. Are you trying to get something in your meditation? Are you trying to attain something on this retreat? If you are, you haven't understood that line in the Ratana Sutta. Your mind, your consciousness, you're trying to get somewhere, another state of existence. As if jhana land is this place where I can exist and be just so blissful. Ajahn Brahma's talked about it. A bliss better than sex. Yeah, I haven't had sex for such a long time. So, you know, I want some of this, please. Can you understand, if you try and think like that, you'll never get anything. You just create so much suffering for yourself. But if you say, I'm going to free my mind from all future existence, I don't want to be anything, I just, no more existence, no more states of existence, no more states of meditation, no more states of enlightenment, no more states of anything. Now you're on the path. Nothing to get, nowhere to go, nothing to attain. And you start thinking like that in your meditation, just remind, not thinking, but just having that attitude, that inclination. Nowhere to go. When you've got nowhere to go, you just are here. And as you stay here long enough, the here vanishes, disappears. Because even here is a state of existence, and that just vanishes, disappears. Because the seed, kina bija avivulhi chanda, the seed of all this, that wanting, that which creates existence, is destroyed. So you actually experience that when you're meditating, when you destroy the seed temporarily, no doing, no wanting, no attaining, no trying to get anything. Destroy that seed. Things start to vanish. Past and future vanishes, body vanishes, the will vanishes, the mind vanishes. You may be scared at first, but it's bliss. Just get a little bit vanishing and you have fun. That's actually how it works. You give up a little and you get bliss. They encourage you, okay, this is what I get by just giving up past and future. Let's see if I can give up a bit more. So you give up a bit more, you give up all your thinking. Whew, this is peaceful. Silence. Yeah, let's see what else I can give up. So you give up your body. Ah, just this body was just a pain. Not just a pain in the arse, a pain in the neck, a pain in the mouth, a pain in the ears, a pain in the nose, a pain all over. That's all gone. Bliss. Give up your will. This thing which you cherish. It's me, it's mine. And I want to do what I want to do. That's why it's great seeing people come to the monastery and seeing how they always wheedle and manage to get whatever they want. You know, sometimes some of you think you're really clever, that you can actually work the system, you know, to get what you want in a monastery. I know what you're up to. But I let you do it because, yeah, just, you know, little kids being silly. Because after a while, you don't get anything at all. That's not how you work the system. How you work the system is totally abandoning, letting go, becoming out of control, letting go of your will. Tough for many of you, that's why I let you, you know, wheedle and work the system, get your own way. Because that's as much as you can do for now. But after a while, you realize that is the source of suffering. Yeah, you get the food you like, you know, you can get the requisites you need, you can get your hut all nice and with all your sensory pleasures and radios or iPods or whatever else you can get in there. Yeah, I know what you do, but it doesn't matter. After a while, it's the will which you see as a problem. Why do you want that anyway? A lot of times, because I just want to do it, because just to show that, you know, I'm not the same as anybody else. You know, that I am me, not like these other stupid guys in brown. They're just totally brainwashed by this Ajahn Brahm cult figure. No, just to be able to totally let go and vanish. Not to be anyone, not to be different, not to be special. To give up that will. And, you know, just when you give it up, it's just so much bliss. You don't have to do anything. I was telling my attendant that just, you know, I was so tired after some of those, you know, birthday parties. I just went back to my hut and, you know, to meditate. I was just so tired. But then I sort of used that tiredness. I said, look, my body is just so worn out, but worse than that, my brain is just so tired. So I said, okay, brain, you're tired. What does the brain need when it's tired? It needs a rest. So I sat there and did nothing. Thinking and doing and worrying and planning and stuff was just too much work. So I sat there, did nothing. You get some nice meditation that way. So just look, even your brains, some of you have been working your brain so hard. Give it a break. Say, brain, you don't have to do anything. Time out. Holiday, rest, vacation, emptiness. That's what vacation means, emptiness. Vacate your mind. And it just worked so well. My brain said, okay, I need to rest. So it totally relaxed. Didn't try to relax. It just did relax. It didn't do anything. It gave up its will. When it gave up willing anything, it became totally peaceful. It's so happy when you're sort of physically exhausted to get bliss. Why? Because you didn't do anything. That's called rest. That's called the way to stillness. When you realize that, you just let these things go. Little by little, you let things go more and more. You say, why not? Because look, to will and to struggle and to complain, that's just going to create so much more suffering. So you let it go, and there's no suffering, it's just peace, and it gets more and more deep, more and more intense, more and more bliss. You understand the Dhamma by practicing the meditation. The insight and the calm, they just always go together. There is no samatha, there is no vipassana, they're always together. They're a pair, Siamese twins, which cannot be separated. Then you go to the last line. Again, I say this was the my favorite, the killer. And I call it the killer for a reason. Nubanti dira yatayang padipo. It will, nibbana, and the nicest word, for certain, just like this oil lamp or the flame. I like the certainty. Because what it's actually saying, doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're a monk or layperson, no matter what age, sexual orientation, gender, whatever, race, whatever, if you let go of the past, destroy it. If you don't create a future, if you free your mind from all attainments existing, being, going anywhere, so that the seed is destroyed, that means for certain you are nibbana. The seed, the fuel, is destroyed. You'll cease. The process will stop. The deep stillness and emptiness, when nothing moves, when nothing is there. Certainty. That's why I keep on saying this is an automatic process. It's nothing to do with you. There's no one here who says, no, this won't happen to me, it can't happen to me, that somehow I'm deficient. Knowing anatta, non-self, you won't realize it's nothing to do with you. Don't care how old, young, how whether you're experienced in Buddhism or you just dropped into this monastery today. It doesn't matter. That's the most beautiful thing. If you're intelligent or if you're stupid, you know, if you, you know, haven't passed school or you just have got double PhDs, that's not the point. Nubanti dira, for certain. You'll cease, just like the lamp goes out. When the oil is used up, the lamp, the light fades, it's gone. Ceasing. The very idea of cessation, to some is scary. To the lay people, not the lay people, sorry, to the non-enlightened people, that is suffering. To the enlightened ones, that's bliss. Peace, freedom at last. So remember, when you're meditating, you're just disappearing, you're turning out the light. You're vanishing. Turning out the light of past and future where you usually live. So whatever light is left can go into the present moment. Turning out all this thinking so the light can go in the silence. And so I was telling a few people in the interviews, and it's an important point, just, know, a little bit disconnected with the main thrust of the talk. Sometimes as you get into these deep, subtle states, as the light is going out, it takes a while for you to be able to see. The old simile of you're in this lit room. Maybe it won't work tonight because there's a moon up. But maybe when there's no moon, you go out from this lit room into the darkness, you cannot see things. It takes a while for your eyes to adjust to the more subtle light. But when you've gone out from a lit room into the darkness, after a minute or two, you start to see shapes, silhouettes, little by little as your pupils dilate, allowing more light into the retina, you can start to see things. You get your night vision. Even though the dark night is more subtle than the daylight, you can still see. And that's exactly what happens in meditation. As you go from one stage to another, it's as if you're turning, you're going from one lit room into a darker room. The light is going out. And it takes a bit of a while for you to get used to be able to see the subtle forms. That's why that sometimes, you know, you may be in the present moment. What the hell is this present moment? At first you can't see it. You stay in the present moment long enough and you can start to see it. Or stillness or silence. What is silence? At first when you go in from the out from the noisy, rough mind to the more subtle, still mind, it's hard to get a handle on what you're experiencing. It's like going out from the lit room into the darkness. You just don't know where you are. That's why people say, what am I supposed to watch? What's my meditation object? My job as a teacher is to say, just hang out there for a bit, be a bit more patient, and you'll know what stillness is. You'll be able to, your mindfulness will become sensitive to the more subtle meditation object. And you know, if you want to go into deep meditation, you have to be really, really sensitive to the most subtle meditation objects. Nimittas are very subtle. So is the jhanas. That's why Potapata Sutta, the subtle but real sukkhama, saccha, perceptions of the jhanas. You need a refined mind to be able to see those things. But to refine the mind, all you need is patience. After a while you get used to the stillness, to the peace. You know what it is, because you've been there a long time. You recognize it. And as I mentioned to somebody, there's a three stages. First of all, you recognize that stage of meditation. Ah, this is what stillness is. Ah, this is what delightful breath is. Ah, this is what the nimitta is. You recognize these things. And then you become so familiar with them. That's the second stage, familiarity. That you get to that third stage of ease. You relax in their presence. Like many of you, when you first may have met me, you think, oh, who's this? It's a big monk. You may feel a bit afraid. But after a while, you just treat me just like one of your mates, just a good bloke. Great. That's my aim. To take away that sort of fear, so you're at ease. Same way with silence. After a while, you're not afraid of it anymore. You're a friend to the silence, an old friend. You just hang out together for a long time. You're total at ease in their company. At every stage of the meditation, this is what we have to go through. Recognition, familiarity, and then ease. When we're at ease, we're at that level. At ease with a beautiful breath. Just hanging out with a delightful breath. Because when you're at ease, you're not interfering with it. You're not controlling, you're not tensing up with it. You're just letting it be. It's a mate, a friend. You just relax. And that's when it develops into the next stage. You're going to recognize the next stage. Develop familiarity and then ease. Just like the lights going out. And you have to adjust to the more subtle lights. Every stage in the meditation, it's more and more subtleness. More and more letting go until you just see the very, very subtle states of the jhanas when there's hardly anything left. And see all of that disappear too. To see the lamp go out. Nibbanti Dira Yatayang Pradipa. Yeah, they're talking about the light in the on the shrine, but also means the light which is your consciousness, your mind. To see that just flicker and vanish. That's Nibbana. And it all is made by, you can't just think that. You can't just speculate it. You can't just work it out, because look, for many of you it goes against reason. I've just reasoned it, but some of you go out and say, there's something wrong with that. That can't be it. There's a resistance there, and there always will be that resistance. But you experience it. So your power of meditation, you go deeper and deeper following this path. And the experience, this is things disappearing. You understand what that light is and see it fading away. And say, this is what I've just chanted. Nibbanti Dira Yatayang Pradipa. You've understood the Ratana Sutta, that one line. And you see it happening. Now you understand what Nibbana is. You felt it. You've been there. You understand why all that other part about letting go of the past and the future and the past. How to let go of all attainments, being. Seeing everything vanish. That is a path. That's when why I chant the Ratna Sutra, I really get off on it. Just have so much fun and joy seeing just these beautiful words of Dhamma. Just one gatha, just four lines. Just so much Dhamma, so much truth, so much insight, and so much guidance in how to meditate, to be free, to bliss out, and have just this beautiful, beautiful time. So, hopefully, that you will let go. No past, no future. No attainment, no trying to become something. Just free your mind from all states of existence and see the light disappear. And remember that three stages. Recognition, familiarity and ease. How peaceful, how blissful at last. That's why when you get that stillness, you see things as they truly are. You understand at last. And from seeing things as they truly are, coming from the deep stillness, especially the jhanas, seeing things vanish, then that gives rise to nibbida. The mind's not interested anymore in these things. It can let go even more. Nibbida is a sense of just, not just disinterest. I don't want to touch this anymore. Nibbida is what you do to the toilet paper with feces on it. You throw it away and flush it away. So it disappears. It viragas, fades away, and then you're free. Free at last. Enlightened. So that's the path. All described in just a couple of verses. Four lines, rather. Of Ratna Sutta. Brilliant. So that's the talk this evening. Andamaya Mawara Gutaya Sadhu Dhamma Sidhu.